Commuting became difficult. He would take the morning train into Delhi and, having nowhere to stay, return to Vrindavan the same night. That didn't give him much time in Delhi, and it was expensive. At first he had stayed with Mr. Gupta, a pious gentleman who studied the Gita regularly and afforded sadhus the place to stay. Abhay had explained to Mr. Gupta about his back to Godhead and his desire to preach in the West. It had been a good arrangement, and Abhay had kept to himself writing. But in time, another sadhu took the room. Even with his minimal personal expenses, it was difficult to raise enough in donations to cover traveling, printing, and mailing. Giving copies of Back to Godhead away wasn't difficult, and he was doing that in Vrindavan, but working alone, writing, editing, selling, soliciting donations was too much. The printer, Mr. Jain, was amazed, wondering why a person would put himself through such difficulties printing a newspaper he couldn't afford. Srila Prabhupada, I worked for Back to Godhead day and night. In the beginning, when I was a householder, I did not care if somebody paid or not paid. I used to distribute liberally. But when I left my household life and I was living alone, sometimes in Vrindavan and sometimes in Delhi, or sometimes traveling for pushing on BTG, they were very hard days. After his 12th consecutive fortnightly edition, the issue for November 20th, 1956, Abhay ran out of money. Mr. Jain had to throw up his hands, saying he couldn't print simply out of friendship. Abhay returned to Vrindavan, where he spent his time writing, but with no plan for publication. It was because people weren't interested in becoming Krishna consciousness, because they had no time, that Back to Godhead had failed financially. Certain sadhus in India were celebrated and influential, but Abhay was not amongst them. Of course, the uncompromising preaching he had learned from his spiritual master, the chopping technique, in which he openly criticized revered politicians and holy men, was not likely to win him favor and patronage. Don't flatter, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had said. Speak the truth. And if Krishna is pleased, then you will come out successful. Money will come. And Abhay had firm faith in this. That was his outstanding asset, his faith in his spiritual master. He was sure that by following Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he would receive his blessings and the blessings of Lord Chaitanya. Although for the last 2 years, he had followed any path that had opened, as far as it had led, he had remained one-pointed, aimed at serving the order of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was confident. Sooner or later, he would obtain substantial backing. He would find a sympathetic audience. Sincere workers would join him. A letter came to Abhay in Vrindavan from his disciple, Acharya Prabhakar Mishra, and it gave Abhay an idea. Acharya Prabhakar, who was in Bombay working as secretary of the Sanskrit department at the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, invited Srila Bhakti Vedanta Prabhu to join him there for preaching together, just as in the old days. The founder director of the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan was Governor K.M. Munshi, the same governor whose wife had pressured Abhay to give up the Radha Memorial in Jhansi. But Acharya Prabhakar, having recently established a friendship with the governor, intimated to Abhay that the governor might be willing to help. Thus, in January 1957, after assuring Mahant Gopal that he would return and that he would spend 5 rupees a month for his room, Abhay traveled to Bombay. Acharya Prabhakar got Abhay quarters in the faculty residence and introduced him to various scholars and religionists. They then attended a lecture by Governor Munshi entitled, "What is Wrong with the World?" Afterwards, Abhay approached the governor, expressing his appreciation of the speech, but stressing that it would take a spiritual movement to avert the imminent global disasters. Without God consciousness, even Mr. Munshi's work in the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan would be a waste of time. Abhay spoke of his interest in reviving the League of Devotees, and he suggested how he might work within the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan to infuse the life of God consciousness into the governor's cultural project. Governor Munshi responded by offering Abhay a post as honorary professor of Bhagavad Gita. Abhay accepted and gave the governor some copies of Back to Godhead, requesting that he read them in his spare time. As honorary professor of Bhagavad Gita, Abhay began each class with the Hare Krishna Kirtan and then lectured on the Gita, presenting Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he soon found his post confining. Within the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, he found little scope for reviving the League of Devotees. So we're starting on the top of page 210, the left-hand page. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Canon 5, chapter 1, verse number 18. Yeah, Shats. We didn't have it. Yeah. Is it on the board?
Yeah.
Yeah, Shats Apatnam Viji Viji Gi Shamano.
Shats Apatnam Viji Shamano.
Diheshu Nirvishya Yateta Purvam. Yeti Dugashita Urjitarin.
Yeti Dugashita Urjitarin.
Kshineshu Kamam Gicharet Vipaschet.
Kshineshu Kamam Gicharet
Vipaschet. Yakshat Sapatnam Vijiki Shamanam.
Yakshat Sapatnam Vijiki
Shamanam. Kiheshu Nirvishya Yateta Purvam. Atyeti Dugashita Urjitarin.
Atyeti Dugashita Urjitarin.
Chineshu Kaman Vicharet Vipaschit.
Chineshu Kaman Vicharet Vipaschit.
Yakshat Sapatnam Vijiki Shamanam.
Sat Sapatnam Vijiki Shamanam.
Kiheshu Nirvishya Yateta Purvam.
Kiheshu Nirvishya Yateta Purvam.
Atyeti Gurdugashita Urjitarin.
Atyeti Gurdugashita Urjitarin.
Chineshu Kaman Vicharet Vipaschit.
Chineshu Kaman Vicharet Vipaschit. Yasat Sapatnam Viji Samanam.
Yakshat Sapatnam Vijigi Shamanam.
Kireshu Nirvishaya Teta Purvam.
Kireshu Nirvishaya Teta Purvam.
Atyeti Durga Shri
Satsapatnam Vijigishamano. Yesha Nivishaya Te Tapurvam. Athirte Gurvasita Ujitayam. Chinishu Kaman Vichare Vivaschit. Desiring to conquer.
Desiring to conquer.
Griheshu.
Griheshu.
In household life.
In household life.
Nirvisha.
Nirvisha.
Having entered.
Having entered.
Yateta.
Yateta.
Must try.
Must try.
Purvam.
Purvam.
First.
First.
Atyeti.
Atyeti.
Conquers.
Conquers.
Durga Ashita.
Durga Ashita.
Being in a fortified place.
Being in a fortified place.
Urjita Arin.
Urjita Arin.
Very strong enemies.
Very strong enemies.
Kshineshu.
Kshineshu.
Decreased.
Decreased.
Kamam.
Kamam.
Lusty desires.
Lusty desires.
Vicharet. The most experienced learned.
Most experienced learned.
Comma, learned. Translation. One who is situated in household life and who systematically conquers his mind in five senses, sense organs, is like a king in his fortress who conquers his powerful enemies. After one has been trained in household life and his lusty desires have decreased, he can move anywhere without danger. Please repeat. One who is situated in household life.
One who is situated in household life.
And who systematically conquers his mind.
And who systematically conquers his mind.
And five sense organs.
Five sense organs.
Is like a king in his fortress.
Is like a king in his fortress.
Who conquers his powerful enemies.
Who conquers his powerful enemies.
After one has been trained.
After one has been trained.
In household life.
In household life.
And his lusty desires have decreased.
And his lusty desires have decreased.
He can move anywhere without danger.
He can move anywhere without danger.
Prabhupada's purport. The Vedic system of four varnas and four ashrams is very scientific, and its entire purpose is to enable one to control the senses. Before entering household life, Grihastha ashram, a student is fully trained to become Jitendriya, a conqueror of the senses. Such a mature student is allowed to become a householder. And because he was first trained in conquering his senses, he retires from household life and becomes Vanaprastha as soon as the strong waves of youthful life are past and he reaches the verge of old age at 50 years or slightly more. Then, after being further trained, he accepts sannyas. He is then a fully learned and renounced person who can move anywhere and everywhere without fear of being captivated by material desires. The senses are considered very powerful enemies. As a king in a strong fortress can conquer powerful enemies, so a householder in Grihastha ashram, household life, can conquer the lusty desires of youth and be very secure when he takes vanaprastha and sannyas. Om Gyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unnitam Nena Tasmay Shri Guruve Namah. Prabhupada talks here about the Vedic system of four varnas and ashrams, and the whole system of Varnashram, the whole system of Vedic society is to control the senses, is to advance is to make progress in spiritual life. The human society is meant specifically for religious life. Human society is meant specifically for the purpose of going home, back to Godhead. And there's so many species of life, and we've been through 8,400,000 species of life. We have no idea how many bodies we've had, one after another, one after another. But it's many, many. Even sometimes a jiva soul who's not gone back to Godhead, at the end of a cosmic manifestation, they get absorbed back into the body of Lord Mahavishnu, who in his inhaling period, everything, all the universes, all the infinite universes rest within his body. And they don't come back out for a very, very long time. And billions, trillions of years. And during that period, the conditioned soul, the jiva soul, is in a state of a suspended animation where there's no opportunity to do anything, let alone take to devotional service. You can't do anything. You can't be an animal. You can't be a plant. You can't be a rock. You can't do anything. So it's considered a blessing, a benediction, when Lord Mahavishnu breathes out again and the living entities get a chance to become active again. Because at least if you're active, you have a chance. There's chances available to advance. If you're in the lower species of life, you automatically progress upwards through the 8,400,000 species of life. And there's always a chance you could meet a devotee and get some, if you're in the body of a dog or a plant, you could hear the chanting of the holy name, or you could get somebody, devotee could throw you some prasadam. And then when you come to the human form of life, which is inevitable after a long period of time, then there will be chances to take to spiritual life, which is the whole idea. So anyway, it's a long, long time. It's a lot of births and deaths we've passed through. And now we're at this point. So the Vedic system, which is Prabhupada often called the human society, in this day and age, almost everywhere, he called it polished animal life. He said things like, if you called them human beings, he'd be giving them a compliment. That's a pretty heavy statement, because mostly he referred to what passes for human life now as polished animal life. Polished animal life means you do the same thing the animals do, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, but you do them in a little better way. You have a house and a bed instead of sleeping in the woods. So there's so many ways. It's a little bit better in polished animal life, but it's still considered animal life. Because it's not, human life begins when the person begins to inquire into the purpose of life and begins to inquire with some degree of submission and humility into the existence of God. And then when he comes in contact with some representative of God, and he actually takes to some religious principles. Human life is meant for religion, just like it's a promotion. It's a benediction to be a human being. It's a privilege to be in the human form of life. to say in any company or government, if you get a promotion and you get, you're like a minister or a CEO or a president or something, you get some big promotion, you're in a big position, you have all kinds of perks and benefits, and you might have a company airplane and so many things you have privileges. But the opposite side of that is that you have so much responsibility. You have to take responsibility for so many things. You have headaches all the time. What do I do about this? What do I do about that? Where the average worker, he doesn't have any perks, but he just goes to work in the morning, comes home at night, reads the newspaper, has a beer, goes to bed, and he doesn't really have much to worry about. Of course, everybody's always in anxiety in the material world, but relatively speaking, he doesn't have any perks, but he doesn't have the responsibility and the headaches either. So, but the CEO, he has many perks, but he also has so much anxiety and stress. So the human form of life is like that. We have the privilege of sleeping in the house instead of sleeping in the woods. We don't have to worry, generally speaking, moment by moment, if some bigger animal is going to run up to us and bite us and kill us and eat us on the spot. We generally don't have to worry about that in the human form of life. But if you're out in the woods, the animals are always looking around every second. They're always worried because that can happen any second. Somebody can come up and just kill them on the spot. So they don't have any privileges, but also they don't have any responsibility. I think devotee recently was giving in a class, and a dog comes to a street corner. He doesn't have to, if he has any brains, he'll look left and right before he crosses the street, but he doesn't have any responsibility. The cops can't catch him and give him a ticket for crossing against the light. He's just a dog. But a human being is responsible to obey the laws. But the privilege is that in the human form of life, you have the ability to escape completely from the cycle of birth and death, where we've been stuck for so long and suffering, and you can escape from it all and go back to the spiritual world and live eternally in bliss and knowledge in the presence of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and be ecstatic every second. So that's a great, great, great privilege in the human form of life. So the human, without the Varnashram system, without the division, the spiritual, social and spiritual divisions of Vedic society, then we just act like animals. And we're not able to take advantage of this boon, the human form of life. So the whole idea that the it's meant for sense control of the senses, it's just like Prabhupada describes the yoga ladder, like Astanga yoga, or the other yoga processes of meditation, and so many things that you can do which are within the realm of bona fide yoga practices, meant for, but they're all meant for the purpose of bringing the mind under control. And when the mind is under, they're not an end in themselves. To be able to bend your body in various poses, it's a nice physical exercise, but it's not a spiritual goal. Or to be able to sit in the lotus posture for hours or days or years and meditate. It's a nice way to control the mind to some degree, But it's not a spiritual goal. The spiritual goal, the only spiritual goal worth achieving is the goal of coming to understand, is coming back to our original original identity as eternal servants of Krishna. It's the only goal. All the other things, all the other yoga practices and whatever, offering sacrifices and meditating and worshiping the forefathers and offering sacrifices to the demigods and this ritual and that ritual, those are all means of controlling the mind and senses and gradually giving up the idea of selfish sense gratification and coming to the point of surrendering to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya prays, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kavitam, Vajagadisha Kamayam. I don't want wealth. Everybody is crazy for money. Everybody wants money. I was sitting on a bench out there last night, and these three young people walked by, and they were talking. One of the girls was saying, can you imagine having that kind of money? And that's basically all it caught of what she said. But by that kind of money, she means you have so much money that you can do anything you want. You can go, you can have, you don't have to work, and you have a car, you can do anything. Can you imagine having that kind of money? Everyone's crazy to get money. And Janam, everybody wants followers. I want people to obey me, to look up to me, to respect me, to do what I tell them. And Sundarim, everybody wants beautiful women. So everybody's crazy about a beautiful woman, beautiful man. Everybody's crazy about it. The whole society is mad after everywhere you look in this polished animal society. It's all everywhere you look. But Vedic society is meant to limit those things, to control those things, to be satisfied with a modest amount of money. Prabhupada spoke many times, it's very good for a Brahmin. Brahmin is, the primary purpose of a Brahmin is to be engaged in spiritual life. So it's very good for a Brahmin to be poor. In some purports where Prabhupada says that a Brahmin should keep himself in a poor condition. Because of that, with money comes more ability to have sense gratification, more temptation for so many things that are not spiritual, or that won't help your spiritual life. So a Brahmin or a Vaishnava, it's good to be poor. It's a good thing. And to limit association with the opposite sex is a good thing. A Brahmachari is very much restricted from association with the opposite sex. And Prabhupada says here that if he's trained, he can get married. Such a mature student is allowed to become a householder. And because he was first trained in conquering his senses, and he skips the whole married life. He says, because he was first trained in conquering his senses, he retires from household life and becomes vanaprastha as soon as the strong waves of youthful life are past, and he reaches the verge of old age at 50 years, or slightly more. So married life is a concession for sex life. It's a license. Like when you get a driver's license, you have to pay some money, you have to pass a test, you have to learn the rules of the road, and if you get stopped by the cops, they give you a ticket, and it goes on your license, and you're restricted by having the license to drive a car. It's meant to restrict. Not just any old person can jump in a car and start driving. You have to accept the restrictions. So married life is like that. You can have some limited sense gratification, but it's restricted within a Krishna conscious married situation. And the whole point is that the sense gratification of married life is not the goal. Just like to become a good hatha yoga or jnani or a raja yoga or whatever kind of yoga you're doing, that's not the goal. The goal is to come to Krishna. So in married life also, the goal is not sense gratification, but the goal is to live together peacefully and to help each other to be good devotees. And that means restriction of sense gratification and the dedication of life. It's a concession for sense gratification, but it's also considered a good vehicle for controlling the senses and becoming more mature in devotional service. And at the end, after 50 years old or slightly more, you retire. Vanaprastha means individually, husband and wife retire, or together they retire, and they travel to the holy places. Actually, there's a section in the Bhagavatam where it gives the rules for vanaprastha life, and it's like the vanaprasthas have to live in the forest and sleep on the ground and wear clothes made out of tree bark and eat only fruit from the trees and things. So it's like, I forget exactly where it is in the Bhagavatam. There's a whole section, I think it's in the fourth canto. And so vanaprastha, because we don't do that kind of vanaprastha now, but there are many vanaprastha couples in ISKCON who were married for many years, had some children, and now they're very, very extremely renounced, like a sannyasi. And they travel, they live very humbly, and generally pretty poor. Not always, but a lot of times very poor. And so that's the idea, that household life is okay, because the only goal of anything that we do in this material world is to get out of here. There's nothing good to be achieved here. There's nothing beneficial that can be achieved here. To get money is not an achievement. To start an ecological defense fund or save a rainforest is not an achievement. Anything can be done as long as it's connected with Krishna consciousness, it's okay. But there's nothing
nothing's good in this life. So you could go back to Godhead as soon as practical, right?
Now, Prabhupada said you can go back to Godhead in this very life.
But if you're so unhappy, shouldn't you even take your own life?
Oh, no. That is forbidden.
Okay.
That is forbidden.
Is it forbidden to be happy in this life?
It's impossible to be happy materially. It's not forbidden, it's impossible.
Thank you.
So anyways, so the only good thing about this life is that we come to the human form of life, and that allows us to escape. It's just like if you're in prison. It's not, Prabhupada often said, whether you're a first-class prisoner or a third, it's like a couple times I've been in jail, just for a couple times for a night. Only one night. One time I was there only for like 2 or 3 hours. But being in jail is like a really heavy thing. Because it's like, you don't really think about it until it happens. And they put you in this prison cell, and they close the door, and they lock it, and it's like, you know that you cannot get out. And it's a really heavy psychological experience that you know you're not going anywhere until they let you go somewhere. And you're completely at their mercy. So whether you're a first-class prisoner or a third-class prisoner, in the material world, it may be, to be in the human form of life, especially if you're well off or comfortably off, it's compared to a first-class prisoner. And if you're born in a very poor situation or with bad health or struggling with some disease, and that's a third-class prisoner. But either way, you're still in prison. As Prabhupada said at one time, he said he was in a room in Bombay, and he said that some of his disciples were there, and he said, "I'm in this room 24 hours a day. I'm not going anywhere, and all I'm doing is reading, writing, and people come to talk to me, and I'm not going anywhere. But now if you tell me you have to stay in this room, you can't go anywhere, then immediately I'll be very, very disturbed." So this material world is a prison. That example is always given. And it's always given now, and the reason it's always given now is that it's the example that Prabhupada used. But we don't have to stay here. We can. And I saw a lecture recently, a video, Prabhupada giving class, and one of the disciples, or maybe not a disciple, maybe a guest, but somebody asked Prabhupada, he said, "We've been here so long and we're so conditioned. Is it possible to go back to Godhead even in one lifetime?" And Prabhupada said, even in one life, or maybe she said, to surrender to Krishna, something like that, surrender fully to Krishna, go back. And Prabhupada said, become pure. Prabhupada said, he said, why one lifetime? In one second, you can become pure. So we're in a diseased condition, but we don't have to stay here. We can't, it's always available to us to surrender. Every second is surrendering. So, okay, so I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? He chastised them for talking in class, not paying attention. And Prabhupada said, I think it was that occasion. He said, "I was defeated by my spiritual master,
yeah,
but I felt it was a great gain for me."
Okay,
stop there. All glories to Shri.